In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, June 10th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We thank you for listening to the program today. In hour number two, we'll get an update on the transition out of the National Security Personnel System and take a look at performance management overall in the federal government. John James, the director of the National Security Personnel Transition Office at DOD, and Chuck Grimes, a deputy associate director for employee services at the Office of Personnel Management up on Capitol Hill yesterday. We'll hear what they had to say about the transition out of NSPS and how it's affecting employees at the Department of Defense. Also, Mike Causey's column today at federalnewsradio.com deals with that issue. So if you're interested in NSPS and how it affects people who are moving out of it as mandated by legislation, you can check that out at federalnewsradio.com. Happy to welcome to Industry Chatter this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, Brian Roach, Vice President of Federal for Juniper Systems. Brian, thank you for being on the program today. It's great to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Francis. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon. You are, as a network services provider for the government, I'm going to guess that your top three issues that agencies ask you about are cybersecurity, and cybersecurity. Do I have that right?
Well, you know, to some degree, you're right, Francis, but we deal with a lot of things. Certainly, there's a lot of other initiatives underway. We're dealing with a lot of consolidation issues, and as I'm sure you're well aware, we're seeing a lot of consolidation effort in data centers across the Department of Defense and in the civilian agencies. So we have a variety of areas that we're getting involved. But, yeah, you're right. Cyber is top of mind.
Is there a difference when you're doing data center consolidation for DOD and the civilian agencies, or are the same concepts pretty common amongst the two?
I would say, you know, we have some regulatory issues that we deal with on the defense side. They're a little bit more articulate in some of the security requirements that they have for system-level implementations. And in many cases, we see a little bit more of outsourcing issues on the civilian side of the federal business, where the DOD tends to run and operate their own. But for the most part, I'd say, you know, we address them in the similar manner. They still have similar security requirements than other.
What's the thumbnail sketch on Juniper Federal and what you do most, the bulk of your business for agencies?
Yeah, so Juniper's heritage is really high-performance networking. So we were born out of tackling, you know, the highest and hardest problems on the Internet, really the high-bandwidth issues, the high-performance issues. And so through that heritage, you know, we've been brought into the federal government in the back end. So we're really, we have 1,500 routers sitting on the DISN, under the GigBE program. So we have a very large presence that, that was born on the high performance routing. That high performance, moniker, we now carrying that through into, switching, LAN switching, Ethernet switching. And obviously we've, over the years, have acquired and developed a large security presence in the commercial as well as in the public sector marketplace.
Well, you said cybersecurity is not the only thing people are asking about. Talked about some of the other issues. What are the, maybe the under the radar screen questions that you get from agencies who are maybe just in the preliminary stages of putting out RFPs and so forth, but they're coming to you and saying, all right, they're telling us to collaborate more with the vendors, which Martha Johnson's talked about a lot over the last couple of months. So we're going to collaborate with you, and we have these questions that we want to know. What are they saying?
You know, candidly, I'm getting a tremendous amount of inquiry just around pure economics. I mean, you know, our customers are really being driven to do more with less. I know it sounds cliche, but our customers are truly being driven with reduced budgets. I mean, you look at the Defense Department now, their budgets are going elsewhere, right? They're supporting a lot of activity in Southwest Asia. So we're really being looked at the economics of the situation.
And that's not going to change anytime soon as we start to see what's happening in Congress.
Absolutely not.
How are they asking you to help them address that more with less, or are they just coming to you and saying, how are we going to do this?
Well, I think, you know, you see acquisitions that are driven by cost savings. I will tell you the industry is driving to architectural change, right? We're at a point where we're starting to see, you know, the investment in the infrastructure somewhat outstripping the ROI, right? As you look at continually growing and growing these massive data centers, at some point there's a crossover on the value curve. We're at that point, I would say. You know, we're looking at bandwidth growth requirements outstripping, you know, the current networks, outstripping the current architectures. So we're approaching a breaking point where I think we need to approach things differently. Where we're getting into conversations is around innovation. We use the term new network. You may be seeing that around the Beltway. But we are approaching the new network. We're approaching a flattening of the architecture, a flattening of the data center architectures, higher performance, more out of the existing infrastructure that they have, driving more bandwidth out of the chassis that they're currently running.
Mm-hmm.
Just greater efficiencies across the board. You know, somewhat the Moore's Law,
yeah,
right, of networking.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the ROI starting to outstrip the infrastructure investment, because that really is a crossing of those lines, if you're graphing it in your mind,
yes.
That hasn't been the case maybe ever.
No, in fact, it's been considerably separated for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, to some degree, I think the belief amongst many in the community, many in the industry, was that it would, our technology and the value would always outstrip, you know, and be, you know, covered by the return on investment. Productivity would always win out.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, there is always a crossing in the curve, and I think we're approaching that.
What's driving that?
I think, to some degree, you know, we're seeing explosive demands on the network. You know, we start now tracking 30% growth in video, causing demands. And the architecture that we designed some years ago to move data point to point may no longer be as efficient to deal in, let's say, a cloud-based environment where you have multi-point on both ends of that network as opposed to just a single point-to-point connection.
Yeah.
Having that fungibility of the network so that you can now address and deal with what we call east-to-west traffic in a data center as opposed to north-south, right? Virtual machines, great efficiency gains in the server space.
Yeah.
Great efficiency gains in terms of application and loading of those applications across the data center. That causes a network issue, right? Because most network traffic in a data center is north-south.
Yeah.
You go through the aggregation, you know, top of rack, aggregated layers, out through your edge routers, and then back down, even if you're in the same data center, right? So that north-south traffic actually drives a lot of inefficiency in a data center. So we need to have architectures to flatten out and virtualize those top of rack switches so that we can now connect those servers horizontally right, as well as vertically.
Are the agencies, are they getting that?
I think that certainly the CIOs, the CTOs, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely getting it, because I think you're already seeing, and I don't know if you've had, you know, companies like VMware in here to talk with you, but you're seeing the impact of virtualization on the data center strategies. There's not a CIO that I talk to that doesn't have a virtual machine strategy at some point. And so as a result, I think what we need to address is how to handle the next layer, right? How to handle that on the networking side.
Yeah.
And make that more efficient.
You talked about ROI, doing more with less, and a lot of times what people are telling me is the issue is I need to make these transitions, but the transitions cost money. And so there's another ROI issue to try to demonstrate. How are they dealing with that?
Yeah, and so then there's CapEx vices, OpEx discussions, and there's a number of ways. I know certainly the service provider communities are offering managed services, which I think you see being heavily exploited in the civilian side of the federal business.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's certainly ongoing capital expenditure to maintain these systems. But truthfully, that ongoing capital expenditure is happening today, right? We're upgrading servers. We're getting, you know, that's an ongoing dynamic environment that exists. So where are we on that ROI curve? Are we seeing vastly increased CapEx as a result? I don't know. I don't believe so.
You mentioned that some of those transition strategies work on the civilian side. Could they work in defense? And why are they not yet, do you
think?
Well,
I think they can, and I think they are.
Oh, okay.
They certainly are. We just, because of mission or other, you know, often we find the data centers being housed by, you know, agencies like DISA.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a very good job of doing that. That's their business.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really where that difference is.
Brian Roach is Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks, my guest on Industry Chatter on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll talk some more about doing business with the government when In Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Announcing Executive Update 2010, the Senior Executives Association, in affiliation with Deloitte Federal Human Capital Practice, invites you to join your peers in government June 16th in Washington, D.C. for Executive Update 2010. Sessions focus on the administration's performance expectations for executives, labor management forums, OPM Director John Barry's vision for the Career Executive Corps, Norm Ornstein's congressional election predictions, and much more. For additional information and to register, visit seniorexecutives.org.
Attention, CIOs. There's a cyberspace battle going on.
The threat is everywhere.
And you may be losing.
You should be afraid. Very afraid.
The only way to solve your cybersecurity threat is our way.
Everybody's selling cybersecurity these days. It's all about fear and drama. At HP, we believe cybersecurity isn't about fear. It's about managing threats while still achieving your mission objectives. For us, cybersecurity means actively managing risks and costs, and enhancing the freedom of action of your organization. Every day, HP helps our government and commercial clients securely achieve their missions with speed, precision, and confidence.
In cyberspace, no one can hear you scream.
Take the fear out of cyber threats and enable your organization to thrive in an uncertain environment. Visit HP at hp.com/go/cybersecurity. Outcomes that matter. Copyright 2010 Hewlett-Packard Development Company, LP.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for the Thursday edition of the Dorbeck Insider. We're going to talk about information sharing. GAO has been looking at interagency collaborations, and of course in the world today, you're being asked to work together to solve problems. How's that going? We'll get GAO's assessment. And ensuring the safety of food. A new assessment says the FDA needs to change how it views the challenge of food safety. We'll get details. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorbeck Insider. It's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Brian Roach, Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks. And, Brian, one of the things that people are talking about and holding seminars about and asking for meetings about and on and on and on is cloud computing. And when something becomes so pervasive, when the discussion gets to such levels as it has about cloud, I wonder sometimes if it doesn't become a buzzword where somebody figures, well, if I just go buy some cloud, I'll lose 30 pounds and my hair will grow back and all these wonderful things will happen to me that everybody's talking about. Is that what you're seeing with cloud computing?
To some degree, I think, you know, when any new technology evolves, there's always a hype cycle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you always learn about the, you know, the technology S-curve, right? The hype, the unrealistic expectations, you know.
Yes.
After
Tuesday, I'm calling it the Steven Strasburg effect.
Right. The trough of disillusionment, et cetera,
exactly.
Et cetera. But, well, we haven't seen the coffee cup yet.
That's
right.
Right. Right.
So we'll see how that all plays out. But certainly, you know, cloud, or the way I view it is, you know, I'm an engineer by education. So, you know, cloud to me is a series of technologies that expose and deploy applications in a way that is vastly more scalable and vastly more transportable than, you know, in a current or legacy client-server environment. Mm-hmm. So I think in that regard, you know, there's certainly merit to the hype, mm-hmm. right, in terms of what we can do in that. And then the sharing of those services across maybe organizational boundaries and other. Now, where the hype runs into the challenges is when you start entering security, right? How does your identity transfer from from service to service, right? Inter-service credentials, right? Mm-hmm. How do you transport those credentials? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of challenges there that I think still need to be addressed by the government, still need to be addressed by industry, and to effectively, you know, make, I guess, get to the full level of potential for cloud. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly a variety of methodologies in terms of the deployment, the delivery. I think that, you know, what I see in the federal government is a great opportunity to take advantage of what would, I think, be called private cloud, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of the delivery, the deployment model. But and that just because of the security concerns and the fact that the public internet is still, you know, wide open and is still the Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that it's prudent yet, you know, for government agencies to do that. But they certainly all have public presences, you know, for their constituency.
Yeah.
And that's valid and important, and an important part of, you know, how we interact with our civilians in the United States government. So from that perspective, I'd say there's opportunities to be gained. There is certainly great promise in the technology. Is it a bit overhyped? Yes.
Yeah.
Is there 50? If you talk to 50 different people, you'll probably get 50 different definitions.
Yeah.
I don't know about losing weight and growing hair, but
maybe I overdid it a little bit there.
Great opportunity there. But I think there's certainly value to be gained, and certainly, you know, from my company's perspective, we're developing technology to address those issues. We service some of the largest, you know, commercial cloud providers on earth. That will remain nameless commercial entities,
sure.
But we service them and we produce technology to support them. And,
and
you know, these are worlds, you know, once you get into this environment of cloud, you're dealing with scalability, performance, security issues, and you have to have partners, technology partners that can assist you there.
Mm-hmm. The private cloud concept where you have, it's essentially server virtualization or condensation, I guess, but where your cloud is behind the firewall. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a stepping stone for agencies, or is that potentially the end result?
I mean, is that both
a solution?
Yeah, I think it could be both. Candidly, I think it would make a great solution in many, many cases. But it could be both. It could be that stepping stone. It could be that opportunity to get the applications into a service orientation,
mm-hmm.
which they currently are not. These are a lot of legacy applications out there in the federal government that really are nowhere close to being service oriented.
Yeah.
Right. And so if we can start getting a service orientation to some of our applications, that could be a good first step. It certainly helps the security profile.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, it may be the end state.
Yeah. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, though, I want to talk about, you mentioned some of the legacy systems that agencies are dealing with, both hardware and mm-hmm. software. And I'm wondering if that's causing any kind of an issue for some of these technologies that we're talking about, like virtualization and cloud computing and that kind of thing. We'll do that when we come back. On Federal News Radio 1500 AM, my guest is Brian Roach, Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. A reminder that in hour number two, we'll take a look at the National Security Personnel System. It's shutting down at the Defense Department, and there are some transition issues, some employees dealing with smaller paychecks as a result. Federal News Radio's Mike Causey writing about it on federalnewsradio.com, and you'll hear more about it in hour number two today on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 177 points. The Nasdaq higher by 32. Initial jobless claims fell by 3,000 last week to 456,000. That was less than expected, but continuous claims fell to their lowest level in more than a year. Meantime, the U.S. trade gap widened in April to $40.3 billion. That's slightly higher than the month prior and the highest in 16 months. British Prime Minister David Cameron is complaining about President Obama's harsh criticism of BP. He says the hostile rhetoric could have severe implications for pensioners with nest eggs in the giant oil company. Shares of BP have dropped in half. And metal group Korn says its tour buses will be powered by gasoline other than BP's. The band says they're boycotting the company because of the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico and is urging other touring artists to do the same. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
Whatever your business card says, you're in the business of you, and only you know where you want that business to go. DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management offers 15 different MBA concentrations designed to match both the realities of today's business world and your career ambitions. Keller Graduate School of Management, 3 Washington, D.C. area locations and online. Discover how to grow the business of you at keller.edu. Certified to operate by Chev.
In this economy, every business knows that every dollar saved helps the bottom line. So right now is the perfect time to try GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting lets you meet online with anyone located anywhere right from your computer. GoToMeeting is the best way to increase your productivity and cut costs. Try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. That's an additional 15 days if you use the promo code MEETING. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and...
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
I'm here for the matchmaking service.
But you're a sandwich.
See, how can I fall in love when people think I'm something I'm not?
So you're not a chicken sandwich?
No, I'm a new premium chicken tortata from Taco Bell.
Okay, tell me about the real you.
Well, I'm loaded with fire-grilled chicken and bold flavors with no boring bun to get in the way.
Huh, well, with all your delicious ingredients, I think we can find you someone who loves you for what's on the inside.
Hey, let's not forget about what's on the outside.
With no boring bun, the outside is pretty important, too.
Introducing Taco Bell's new premium chicken tortata. Marinated and fire-grilled all-white meat chicken in your choice of two bold flavors, bacon ranch or salsa roja. Think outside the bun. At participating locations for a limited time only.
Put away your late-night hunger with Taco Bell's fourth meal. All the crunchy, spicy, cheesy, and grilled tastes you crave after dark. Only at Taco Bell. Think outside the bun. Taco Bell is open till 1 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Cyber warfare is an ever-growing problem for federal agencies. Newly proposed cyber legislation and standards will guide security best practices in the coming months. So, how prepared will you be for the daily threats of cyber warfare? Join Fortify Software and some of the nation's top security experts for the live Cyber Warfare Prevention, Securing Your Software and Applications panel discussion on June 17th at 11.05 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Don't miss this dynamic cybersecurity discussion on June 17th at 11.05 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Plane's fuel. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate? A plane ready for takeoff.
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog, now.
Which push-to-talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Buy one BlackBerry Bold smartphone today for $149.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Push-to-talk service available for a $5 monthly fee. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Is there a heroin in technology in your company or branch of government? If so, the March of Dimes would like you to nominate her for the 10th annual Heroines in Technology Awards. Heroines in Technology recognizes women who exemplify outstanding volunteer service to our community. Nominees will be considered from all segments of the tech industry. To nominate a heroine, please visit marchofdimes.com/metro DC or call 703-824-0111 extension 21. The nomination deadline is August 1st.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Brian Roach, Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks, and we're talking about a number of IT challenges that people at agencies are facing. And before the break, Brian, we were talking about the concept of virtual networks and some agencies using it as a stepping stone to going into the cloud, kind of get your feet wet. Or the other option is that this is going to be the cloud solution. You said off the air that you thought that this was a big step, and I agree with that, and I've used the term on the show before, server huggers, where for a long time you had people who wanted to just make sure they could go in and put their arms around their servers and not have it be somewhere where they didn't have control over it. Is that what you're talking about that being a big step, that people are willing to give up at least that little bit of control?
Yeah, I may be a server hugger myself. I don't know, so I'll be careful.
And I mean that in the nicest possible way, of course.
Of course. So I think, you know, we talk about cloud as a set of architectural approaches. We talk about cloud as a delivery mechanism, and deployment models, you know, ubiquitous access, you know, and how NIST defines, you know, they have five criteria that they use to define cloud. The real manifestation, as you look at it, I mean, as we in our daily lives, we touch, Microsoft or Google, and we look at all the people call them mashups and the opportunities there. The federal government is doing that today, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we're leveraging some of those commercial properties into federal systems for GIS purposes or other. We're using Google Maps. We're using, you know, MSN services and, mm-hmm. and applications. So those things are happening, and I think that's a huge step. But architecturally, if you think of, you know, where we came from and a lot of the, I mean, right back to the mainframe era, we still obviously in the federal government for a lot of very good reasons still have a lot of mainframe systems out there, mm-hmm. right? That are, you know, hardwired and segregated and, you know, so going from that level of tight control and that level of client server technology to a cloud environment where we're sharing services, where we're virtualizing services. Listen, virtual machines did away with server huggers,
yeah.
right? You don't know where your VM is running anymore,
yeah,
right?
True.
In a data center. So that concept of having that server under your desk is really gone as soon as we adopted the concept of virtual machines, right? And,
mm-hmm.
and believe me, that is something that's real and it's taking advantage of everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm.
So as you approach that and then you start approaching services that now have to traverse a data center horizontally, as opposed to just a vertical response to a human inquiry mm-hmm. from outside that data center, you're going to have to, you know, deal with things virtually, deal with things at a virtual network layer that we didn't have before. We're still traversing things north-south
yeah.
in those same environments.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, private, public, that's a huge step.
It's just good overall
it's a huge step. It's going to flatten data center architectures. It's going to create an opportunity for us to get down to single architectural responses in the data center where we literally just mesh all those servers together and interoperate,
mm-hmm.
Much like a cloud would outside of a data center. We're
yeah.
going to have that same architectural construct inside the data center. Mm-hmm. At Juniper, we went from three layers in a data center to two, and now we're taking two to one. To make that a much more efficient environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will absolutely see, I think, significant architectural gains as we approach cloud technologies. I don't care how the deployment model, you know, shakes out, whether it be private, hybrid, you know, community or other. I think the gain is really on how we're handling the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be collateral benefit from that.
Yeah.
There's going to be security benefit. There's going to be power gains, green benefit, right, in terms of the carbon footprint of the data center. So there's a lot of very positive things that are going to come out of this.
Yeah, I can already tell, we still have a fair amount of time left in the hour, I can already tell we're going to have more stuff to talk about than we're going to have time to talk about it. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about the transition from legacy hardware and software and how that affects some of the things that we've been discussing, and I do want to get to that. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but before we get away from the cloud, you mentioned the five criteria, that the five definitions that NIST has. Do you think they're the right ones?
You know, I think they're encompassing enough that it certainly defines it. I personally, when I look at them, and I have them here, so if you don't mind, but they define the characteristics of a cloud service as on-demand service, ubiquitous network access, location independent, has rapid elasticity and has a measured service. Now, you know, how do those define? When you look at horizontal characteristics of that nature, I think they're broad enough to certainly, you know, cover the definition of what a cloud service will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think where you get into ubiquitous network access, that becomes an interesting conversation, right, for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
Location independent, certainly that becomes an interesting concept, right, in terms of access controls and as we're dealing with secured environments and others. So, so I think it certainly it works from a definitional perspective. The challenge is always, you know, I guess in the details.
How you define the definition.
All right.
My guest is Brian Roach. He's Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will talk about legacy systems at agencies and dealing with that and the transitions involved when we continue our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com explores the hard issues surrounding cloud computing from the government's perspective, sharing with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the Fed Cloud blog on Twitter, sponsored by Intel and Cisco. Two technology companies leading the cloud revolution.
I'd say most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why if you're a federal employee, you can save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best service this side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run, but I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck.
Nicholas Gruyan is the chair of the Australian Gov 2.0 Task Force.
I like to define Government 2.0 as this large organization that's made up of people, and Gov 2 creates the possibility for them to be smarter and for the interfaces that they have with other people to be much richer, much more sensitive to context.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest, for some industry chatter today is Brian Roach. He's Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks. One thing that agencies are struggling with, Brian, of course, is some of the legacy systems that are in place. We talked a little bit about the transition costs that are involved to moving to some of the technology that we've been discussing, like cloud computing and virtualization and so on. But there is another technological issue with some of these legacy systems, and that is that some agencies are so dependent on them that it's not even practical in some cases to try to move to something that eventually may work better, but there's no room for downtime. It's not like a private sector company where you can go, well, we can just get by on this patch for a little while until we can get to the new next real thing. How are you seeing agencies dealing with those kinds of challenges?
Well, I think you make a great point. I mean, you think of the mission criticality of a lot of these systems. I had, I guess, the great honor of working with the IRS some years ago,
mm-hmm.
while a lot of the modernization efforts were underway. And truthfully, it's almost a mission impossible when you think about, you know, just that annual cycle that they have to support,
mm-hmm.
right? And having those systems available for millions of American citizens.
Yep.
And the mission criticality of those systems. And that transcends, right? That's tax systems. That's, you know, agricultural systems.
Literally every American.
Everywhere you go, right? And so, you know, candidly, I used to see things, and obviously this steps out of my networking world a bit because we're getting more into the application side of things. But I see, a lot of agencies doing very smart things in somewhat bite-sized chunks.
Mm-hmm.
But candidly, you know, if you really look at this from a pure engineering perspective, you have to ask yourself, does it make sense? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
If there's certainly, an ROI, right, or vast ROI to the concept of changing the technological base on which you have applications running, then it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to analyze that. I'm a pragmatist in that regard. If it ain't broke, you don't necessarily have to fix it.
Yeah.
And technology, for technology's sake, I mean, you know, listen, cloud is exciting in many, many respects. It can offer a lot of opportunity and offer us up opportunities to do things and collaborate in ways we never considered
mm-hmm.
Before. However, it is not a panacea,
mm-hmm.
right? There's, as we discussed earlier, security issues. There's all kinds of challenges that have yet to be tackled in that domain.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that perspective, I would say, you know, obviously we've got a lot of really smart people out there working on these very hard problems. If it was easy, it would have been done already.
Right.
And so from that perspective, I would say, you know, I would just take a very pragmatic engineering look at it and take things in reasonable sized programs.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we try to do big things, I think we tend to have big problems.
Yeah. The bite sized chunk concept, from my view as an outsider, seems to be just taking hold. I mean, it like crazy where people are understanding the idea of a 5-year procurement or a 10-year procurement is not a reasonable model anymore. Are you seeing that from the inside,
I think,
too?
I think I'm starting to see a shift away from the large all-or-nothing
mm-hmm.
type IT acquisitions. Certainly, the government still does a number of these things. When we build airplanes and ships and all kinds
right.
of massive things.
Mm-hmm.
But from an IT perspective, I think, you know, the disruption that those can cause in an environment and, you know, the subsequent problems that will obviously happen at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cause too much disruption. And so I'm seeing more and more of acquisition processes leaning in that direction. I'm seeing program managers leaning in that direction. And candidly, when you start to, we joke about, you know, some of the scope and scale of data centers, for example, in the world today. When
mm-hmm.
you think of Yahoo or Microsoft or Google and these monstrous data, they're beyond human comprehension,
yeah.
right? They're beyond human comprehension to manage, and they're beyond human comprehension to really understand what's going on in the environment at all times. And so you have to break that up into, you know, meaningful and bite-sized chunks
mm-hmm.
to get anything done.
The concept of the size of some of these projects is also being impacted. You talked about disruption, and that's a good term, I think, also for the technological disruption, because we're seeing examples now of where an RFP comes out, the thing is procured, and by the time the technology is implemented, the refresh cycles happened, mm-hmm. and that technology is already obsolete. I mean, that didn't happen 10 years ago.
Well,
at least not to the degree that it's happening now.
I may differ with you on
okay.
that point, Francis. I actually think that, you know, certainly from what I see, I think the government is doing a better job of procuring commercial technology to meet its missions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the world I grew up in, you know, we build proprietary systems to meet those missions. And by the time we finished building those systems, mm-hmm. we were already outpaced by the commercial industry in some areas, yeah. right? Obviously, we do very specific things in the government. So, you know, there's not a lot of commercial industries that are targeting every single challenge that the government is facing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say in some respects, you know, the government has gotten pretty good at procuring systems and getting things up and running. There's no doubt that, you know, from my world, the regulatory environment is pretty strict.
Mm-hmm.
And it does cause delays and it can be very expensive. I think the way I look at it is more the concern of potentially keeping out innovators mm-hmm. in the market, right? A small company, it's hard for a small company to do business with the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have the staying power to get through the security accreditation, you know, and certification requirements, the timing to get through
mm-hmm.
those processes, the myriad of processes you have to go through.
Yeah.
And the fact that we don't have one.
Is there a balance, you think, somewhere between? I mean, obviously, we want these companies to be credentialed and,
yes.
and to be screened. Is there a balance there somewhere, you think, that we could find that we don't have
now? Yeah, I think if we can start to consolidate and coordinate some of the requirements, processes throughout, and I would, you know, say across DOD and civilian agencies, so mm-hmm. that we, if there was a federal, potentially one certification environment we could go into from mm-hmm. an IT perspective, that would help, certainly would streamline it. And, you know, there's other methodologies. We have pay for lab services now. So there's a variety of models out there in the certification world that are making it difficult, and certainly consolidation of that and kind of rationalization of that, I mm-hmm. think, would help a lot.
Interesting stuff. Brian Roach is my guest. He's Vice President of Federal at Juniper Systems on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments. Not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Senior Executives Association's annual Career Executive Leadership Conference is coming to the Grand Hyatt in D.C. June 16th. Your time is valuable. Get what you need to know in one day. Topics include the administration's performance expectations for executives, how the 2010 elections will change Congress, how labor management forums affect your ability to manage life after government, and more. Featuring keynotes by OPM Director John Barry, OMB's Shelley Metzenbaum, and American Enterprise Institute's Norm Orenstein. If you're a senior executive, you can't afford to miss this. For the full agenda and to register, visit seniorexecs.org.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, with Brian Roach, Vice President of Federal for Juniper Networks. And another issue that we've been hearing about recently, we finally have a vendor approved for trusted internet connection. And so there will be a lot more TIC action happening over the next couple of months. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are. First of all, whether it impacts your business or not. And second of all, whether you think that's a good idea. We started out, I think, with over 1,000 different potential entryways into federal networks. Karen Evans wanted to get it down to 50. It looks like the final number is going to be somewhere in the 100 or 100 and a quarter range. But overall, do you think that's a good idea, or are we kind of chasing unicorns?
Well, that's if you put on a security hat, obviously reducing your attack profile is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the right number? I guess, you know, you could throw a number in the air.
Well, it used to be 50, and now it looks like it's going to be 100.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, from, you know, just protection of the infrastructure, that is a sound approach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, though, because, you know, you can still introduce as much malicious code through 125 connections as you can through one or 1,000 or any other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's, from my humble opinion, you really have to take on a defense in depth approach and strategy. And you know, when you talk to the security experts, and you know, you have to build that defense in depth architecture throughout, and to some degree assume that they're already in your network.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly in industry, you know, in the industry I work in, the company I work in, and the companies I've worked in before, they just assumed that the bad guys were already inside, and that we, you know, would try to cordon them off. We would have, you know, enclave type architectures that protected that, and obviously having the networking layer that can support and protect you in those environments is very important. So I guess, you know, in terms of the religious discussion about the number of connections, I don't have too strong an opinion. I would just say that regardless of how many connections you have, I think it doesn't protect you. I think it's a false hope of protection as we look at the, you know, defense in depth perspective.
So it continues to be a qualitative issue with security rather than a quantitative.
And it's comprehensive.
Yeah.
And it's complicated. There's no doubt. We have a tremendous number of security experts in this market.
But we don't have enough.
Maybe true.
Yeah.
Maybe true.
Because everybody seems to want to hire them.
Yeah.
The agencies are competing with the private sector.
And for a company that has security technology, we think that's a great thing, right? I guess. But candidly, I think, you know, just being, you know, wide open in terms of understanding, you know, the issues, the attacks, the fact that they're already there, and really just defending yourself in depth is the right approach. Certainly, you know, cutting down the amount of access points probably has some positive benefits.
We're starting to run out of time,
sure.
And before we do, I'd like to kind of get a reverse retrospective. If you and I sit down and have this conversation a year, 18 months, or 2 years from now, and I hope we do, think about the issues that we've talked about today, and think about where you would like to see the agencies or see your company serving the agencies doing some of these things in that time period from now.
Yeah, I think in a year, we're going to see, you know, the new Cyber Command in DOD, you know, kind of taking hold. Things like that take some time to get, you know, implemented, both just from a process perspective, roles and responsibilities. I think that will be much further along, and we'll see some positive effect there. The collaboration with the intelligence side, just, you know, in terms of the location, hopefully we'll see, you know, gains there. I think as we look at the consolidation activities. I know of a number of acquisitions underway that hopefully will be the first movers within the federal government as we look at some of the data center consolidation activity, and how that will manifest itself, not only in how they leverage cloud technologies and how they leverage security technologies. I think we're going to start seeing some real-world examples that we can start looking at and learning from. That'll be tremendously important for the industry and for this market. And I think it's going to be a very interesting year, actually. Yeah. I mean, both from a legislative perspective, I know off air we talked about the number of cybersecurity bills that are running around on the Hill.
And the moving target that creates for vendors to try to figure out.
Absolutely. But I will also tell you that, you know, and my colleagues, and we have our legislative affairs organization working very aggressively with the Hill and with Department of Homeland Security. We're seeing a lot of movement and understanding of, you know, really what it takes to secure the critical infrastructure of the United States. And there's some very, very good and smart people working on that stuff right now. And so I think we're going to, in the next year, we're going to start seeing more and more of the output of those efforts.
Yeah.
That will be very positive for all of us. And that'll take the form of legislation. That'll take the form of technology. That'll take the form of real world examples that we can look to.
About a minute left. Are there some markers that we can look for between now and then? Or are we just, is it just going to be a kind of an evolve as it evolves situation?
Yeah, I guess I'm by nature an evolutionist. but I'd say this is going to be an evolving, an evolving situation.
All right. I really appreciate your time. And as I said earlier, there's much more to talk about than there is time to talk about it. And would love to have you come back and talk about things that we didn't get a chance to touch on, like the actual acquisition process and how it's working for your company and observations that you have there, and a lot more for us to touch on.
Happy to come back. Enjoyed it.